missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And I just want to tell you that I've been like shaking in my boots, like so excited for this case. Melissa like boomeranged me midway through the week, her thesis like presentation on this case. And that just got me so excited at all the hard work you put in. So
yeah,
props to you.
Well, first of all, it's not just the work I put in. Like, okay, so this is one of our top two suggested cases. And okay, so truthfully, I knew a little bit about it going in, and I was not super excited to do it. But when I was looking over the request list, I was like, you know what? Like, multiple people have suggested this. Like, let me do a deep dive real quick. Let me tell you, the reason y'all keep suggesting it is because you don't want to do the deep dive. Because I have like 13 pages of notes on this thing.
Oh, wow. Seriously?
Yeah. So I'm ready. Let me tell you this, though. There are so many theories out there on this case. And once I tell you who it is, you're all going to go, oh. So if I miss something, it's completely possible. I went down web sleuth holes and Reddit trails. So it's been a bit much, but I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait. Just tell the story.
Okay. So are you ready?
No. Duh. Yes. Get on with it.
All right. So today I'm going to talk about the Springfield 3. Yes, it has been done, but y'all, this case is nuts. So for those of you who don't know, the Springfield 3 is three women that are missing without a trace, June 7th of 1992 from Springfield, Missouri.
Now, hold on a second. I just have to tell you that when I first heard about this case, I definitely thought it was about like a couple of cowboys that robbed a saloon out west or something. And now I know I'm wrong.
That's funny. Well, it's not. But before I jump in, I do want to tell you something, and it made me nuts during this whole case. The missing women are Cheryl Levitt, she's 47, her daughter Suzanne, who goes by Susie, who's 19, and Susan's best friend Stacy, who's 18. So Cheryl, Susie, and Stacy. Then the narratives come from their friend Janelle and Stacy's mom Janice. So basically they all have the same name.
So what you're saying is I should start taking notes because it's complicated.
And like when I take notes, when you do it, I just write like M or N. They're all S's and J's.
Okay.
All right. So good luck. All right. So I'm going to start with Cheryl Levitt. She's the mom. She had two kids, Bart and Susie. They had an interesting family dynamic. They were 9 years apart, the two kids. So when Susie was in high school, Bart was, you know, in his mid-20s. And he actually had moved out when he was 17 because he fought with his mom a lot, which, you know, high school kids, whatever. So I think based on, like, research, Bart had a drinking problem and all that. So he actually moved away. But in 1991, he decided to move back home. So he moved to Springfield. At this point, Susie was 18. So she was like, well, crap, like, maybe I'll get an apartment with my big brother. He's 27. And honestly, like when you're 18, that sounds way cooler than living with your parents or your mom.
Way cooler.
So they got an apartment. So one night, his drinking was getting out of control. And one night their fight got physical. And, you know, I've heard this described as like they were wrestling and physical or whatever. And I picture it more like siblings than I do like a full-out fight. Does that make sense?
I mean, it does, but that leads me to kind of believe that you didn't read any reports like the police got called and there was like blood and black eyes, or by the look you're giving me.
Wait, say that again?
I mean, like when you say a sibling fight, I'm thinking blood,
Yes. All that. Okay. I thought you were saying you didn't read their police report. And I was like, no, I read about
this. Oh, no. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it wasn't like this intense bar fight or anything
like that. Yes. Now, I do get the impression. This is Susie's like last straw with his drinking, though. She's like, I'm done. I'm moving out. I'm moving back with mom.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this is early 92. But I really truly believe, like, although it was a physical altercation, yes, like you're saying, it was not like a hospitalization, police are called, blood everywhere. It was just siblings that got in a fight.
Gotcha.
Not that I'm ever downplaying a domestic situation, but it is what it is. So Cheryl is bought a new house that spring, and Susie moved in with her. And it sounds like Cheryl was looking for a new place, but realizing like her daughter was going to move in, she got something a little bigger. And they got the two of them moved in together, and they cut off contact with her brother, Bart.
Okay.
From what I'm gathering, and keep in mind they're both missing, so you can't get their side. Right. But they decided like tough love is how we deal with mm-hmm. his drinking. So they just took their distance.
Oh.
And that's really all there is to Cheryl. So Susie, Cheryl's daughter, and Stacy. So there's actually a third teen in this story, Janelle Kirby. Oh. So it sounds like Janelle and Stacy are friends. Stacy and Susie are friends. So Susie and Janelle are friends because of their relationships with Stacy. Does that make sense?
Well, quite frankly, I had to write it down for it to make any sense.
It's like, I'm friends with you. I'm friends with someone else. You guys are associates because you're friends with
me. Okay, got it.
Okay. So Stacy and Janelle are going to go to the same college in the fall, but Susie's going to stay in the same town and go to cosmetology school. Now, on some of the threads, they're like, oh, Susie has really bad taste in guys. Well, duh, she's 19.
Yeah, seriously.
I feel like you can't, and that's really all there is to it, except for, like, people like, oh, she dated really bad guys. Okay, well, she's in high school. Like, what do you want from her?
I think that's pretty freaking understanding of you, considering you, like,
married my high school?
Yeah. Like, dating in high school.
Yes, I did. But I also feel like if people made bad choices, like, that's not who they necessarily end up with.
Yeah, you know absolutely.
I mean? Like, I feel like, anyway. So June 6th, 92. Sounds like graduation was on a Saturday. It was on a Saturday, truthfully. So it was in the afternoon. So all the family, they go to the ceremony, and then they kind of break off and do, like, family dinners and, like, that type
yep.
of thing.
Got it.
Now, they had big plans for post-graduation. Mm-hmm. They were going to – their school was hosting a dry lock-in, which at 18 sounds like the most fun. Which, caveat, I went to my post-prom dry lock-in, and we had the best time. But either
Can
way.
I ask what a dry lock-in is?
Yeah, so it's when your school – and I actually know because, like I said, I went to the prom one. Your school lets you all in at, like, 8 p.m. or so, and they lock all the doors, and they have, like, events all night long till, like, 6 in the morning.
Oh, okay, so I did have that. It was just called something – different.
And you can't leave, and you can't drink. So, either way, the kids decide, these girls decide, no thank you. And part of it, I think, is like, your graduation is when you feel like an adult. Like, we're done school. Why do we want to go get locked in tonight? So, they decide, instead, they're going to get a hotel near the water park. And then the next day, spend the day in the sunshine enjoying the water park. It seems like the perfect way to, like, wrap up a year.
Yeah, true.
But it sounds like the parents were like, no thanks. like, no hotel, a.k.a. no hotel parties and unsupervised overnights, which my parents would say,
right,
too, with the exception of I went on vacation for graduation with my friends, but either way.
Mm-hmm.
So
sounds a little more classy than a hotel.
Right. And it was a girls' trip, so either way. So these girls decide, okay, we're going to go to a couple parties in town.
Yep.
And then we're all going to get up early and drive out to Branson to the water park. It looked to be about like 30 minutes to 45 minutes away. And it's funny because at 18, I would totally be like, yeah, let's get a hotel room and do all that. And as an adult, I'm like, It's 30, 45 minutes. I'll sleep in my own bed. Thanks.
Funny how time changes, huh?
Totally. So, based on a couple accounts, the girls left the party and headed back to Janelle's for a sleepover before they were going to get up and head to the water park in the morning. But they got to Janelle's, and it seems like it didn't occur to any of them that all the relatives that had come into town to watch Janelle graduate were also staying at Janelle's.
Okay.
So, yeah. So they're like, all right, we can you can sleep on the living room floor. And Stacy and Susie are like, no, we'll just go back to Susie's house because it's just her mom there and we have a bed.
Mm-hmm.
So they leave they leave Janelle's house just after 2 a.m. But they say, okay, we'll call you in the morning and we'll get up early and we'll get the day started. So I want to jump back to Cheryl, the mom, real quick. There was a phone call she made about 10 p.m. to one of her friends saying she was working on the house doing projects and stuff because they just moved in.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the case gets a little bit hard. This is pre-cell phone, obviously, pre-social media, and everyone involved is missing. So the narrative is based on, like, what friends remember. So it's now 2 a.m., or just after, they left Janelle's and headed home.
Okay.
So sometime between 8 and 9, now, some narratives say not 8, Janelle was there. Some say she started calling at 8. So I'm going to say around 8, she was up and calling.
Mm-hmm.
She was calling the house being like, hello, water park, let's go. No answer. So she calls multiple times. No answer. At this point, I think she's more annoyed. Like, come on, guys. Like, we're supposed to go do this water park thing. Like, can we just get moving?
Oh, definitely. I would have been.
So she calls her boyfriend, Mike, and he picks her up and they drive over to Susie's house. Now, like I said, this is between 8 and 9. Since it's a newer house, Janelle actually hadn't been there before, but she knew where it was. So they get there, and she sees all three cars, Cheryl, the mom, Susie, and Stacy's cars in the driveway, to which I imagine...
She must be confused or annoyed.
I think she was like, y'all are sleeping, get up. So this is where we encounter the first weird thing, and... Don't count them because there's a lot of them.
You've got to be kidding.
On the porch, there's glass everywhere. Now, it looks like the globe covering the light bulb is shattered for the porch light. The light seemed to be fine, the bulb was intact, but the outside shell was broken. Now, my question is, I'd like to know if just the shell had fallen or if there was like part of it still in there, like it was hit out, but either way.
I'm kind of wondering about the proximity of the neighbors. I mean, if you smashed a light, like, wouldn't neighbors hear or something like that? I mean...
Oh, well, I mean...
It seems pretty risky to do that, you know? Knowing that you could get someone's attention.
Yeah, some of the neighbors are nosy, some of them have no idea, so it could be a crapshoot. But Mike is a good kid, and he actually notices a broom on the porch, so he actually sweeps up the glass so no one steps on it. I mean, that is nice for him, but then Janelle makes what I think is a little bit odd, but it's whatever. She walks in the house. Now, I think it's odd because she's never been there and the mom was home, or so she thought. If just my friend's cars were there, sure, I would have walked in someone's house and been like, wake up, let's go. But like with their parents home too, I probably would have knocked and knocked and knocked. But... either way, Janelle walks in. She's yelling for them. The house seems normal. She notices the beds look slept in. There's jewelry on the sink and a damp makeup washcloth, like they cleaned off their makeup at night, which good for them. I'm in my mid-30s and barely do that now. But, you know.
Preach, girl.
So nothing seems out of place, really, except for the fact they aren't there and the light bulb. And one more thing. And I don't know if I think this is weird. Everyone online says it is, but I think that's because they're looking at it through a lens. Their dog was barking and running around and wanted to be pet and held. But it could have been abnormal, but maybe not. Like, look at your dog.
Oh, my God. Look at my dog. He's nuts. If anyone walked in, he would just go up, no questions asked.
Right. So if you guys were gone for an extended period of time, regardless if it was like a bad thing, a good thing, or whatever, your dog would be like, hi, pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me.
Yeah, you could be a serial killer and my dog is going to love you.
And that's why, like, I wonder if people are looking at this like, oh, the dog's alone, through a lens of like something happened rather than like individual events. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So also, a side note, Cheryl is a chain smoker, which is 1992. And she never even left the room without a cigarette. But her pack of cigarettes was sitting there. So that's a little bit odd. So Janelle and Mike decide they're going to leave. Janelle is annoyed. She was like, I think part of her wondered they went to the water park without her. And which I'd be annoyed too, but all the cars were there. So she's like, what the heck? So they go to leave, and then something else weird happens. The phone rings. I know, this isn't that weird, but Janelle answers.
Well, kind of. It's like movie timing.
Yes, it is. So she answers, and it's a man saying sexual, vulgar, explicit things.
Get out.
So she hangs up, and it immediately rings again. So she answers, and same thing.
Ew, come on.
So I assume she answered because she was hoping it was like them or someone that knew what was going on with them and got the opposite. Now,
unbelievable.
She chalks it up to a prank call and leaves the house. And like at first I was like, what? And then I was like, you know what? Like in the 90s, before there was like real caller ID and cell phones, like prank calls happened all the time.
I'm really sorry to any victims.
Me too.
Of me.
I mean, I didn't. Of me too. But I didn't say sexually explicit dirty things.
Definitely not.
Right. So that kind of is weird. But so Janelle and Mike leave. Now, at the same time, Stacy's mom calls Janelle's house to talk to Stacy. Now, remember, the girl's supposed to go there the night before. Well, Janelle's sister answers and is like, no, my whole family's staying here. So Stacy went to Susie's house, which my mom would be pissed if she thought I was somewhere and I didn't have a cell phone and she called there and they were like, she never came here.
Yeah, I guess they'd start out really pissed and then kind of get worried or something.
Well, here's the thing. Susie just moved. So Stacy's mom doesn't have Susie's new number.
So that turns to worried real fast.
Well, yeah, that and mad. Like, I don't think in the 90s my parents would have, like, lost their mind. They would have been mad at me. Like, how are you this irresponsible that you're tell us you're one place, you're not there. We don't have contact information for you.
Yep.
So that's in the morning. Mm-hmm. Now, this day, I think Janelle was just more annoyed and thought they went to the water park without her. Because the whole day goes by, like, without anything. So, finally, in the afternoon, Stacy's mom, Janice, I know these names, would do what my parents would do. They drove over to Susie's house.
I'm sorry, did anyone else sing Stacy's mom?
I know, I thought that, too. When I was writing it, I was like, Stacy's mom, oh, look at that. So either way, she drives over to Cheryl and Susie's house. And I could see my parents doing that, being like, where is my child? Like, now, I don't believe my parents would do what she did next. She knocks on the door. No answer. Her daughter's car is in the driveway.
Uh-huh.
And decides to walk in the house.
I think I would.
Okay. I don't have kids, so, like, I can't really tell you that. You know what I mean?
But I can see you doing that, too.
Oh, I would do it. But either way, she notices her daughter's clothes are there, and her sleep t-shirt is missing. Now, I want to mention at this point, like, this is in a lot of theories. Like, oh, my gosh, she left in her underwear and a t-shirt. Like, but I have two questions. A, where's her bathing suit and all that stuff for the water park?
Ah,
yep. And B, why couldn't she have borrowed Susie's clothes?
Good point.
So either way, but she notices her daughter's and Susie's purses are there. She also notices Cheryl's purse is there.
All right.
Now, one report says Cheryl has $800 cash, and one says she has $750 cash. Either way, she has a substantial amount of cash in her purse.
I'm like, that's a lot of money, like, even now.
Right.
You know?
Now, this is when she calls the police. But in also doing that, she does something that, like, I called my sister last night, and I was like, I don't want to tell you my case. I don't want to tell you anything about it because I want you to listen. But I need to tell you this part.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, okay. So Janice walks over to the phone and sees the answering machine light blinking. Now, if you're not sitting down, sit down now.
Oh,
because
God.
She hits play.
Oh.
Which automatically erased the message after it plays.
Oh, no.
Which, okay, that's awful.
Yeah.
But she didn't listen to the message.
Oh.
She recalls it was a man, but that's it.
Oh, no.
She doesn't remember what he said, who it was.
I can't think of a worse feeling in that moment.
I don't think she, like, paid attention. Like, I don't think she just didn't think she should listen. I just think she was like, oh, hit play, like, mindlessly.
Okay.
Which, what? You're in someone else's house and checking their voicemail. You don't need to, like, tell them later?
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
So, we're back to calling the police. So, she's calling the police. The police ask her. Now, at this point, it's in the evening, and the missing people are adults, technically. They're 18, 19, in her 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So, they say, okay, can you come in tomorrow and do a missing persons report and an interview?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, no problem.
Right.
And Amy. The next sentence out of their mouth is, can you also bring your daughter's dental records?
What? Are you kidding?
I love your face right now. Can you?
Because I just, like, smacked my teeth together. Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine?
I would take off, like, Rocky, running, showing up, drenched in sweat. I mean, let me just stop at the dentist's office and pick up those dental records I have. I mean, I don't have dental records on hand like that. I don't know if you do.
I can't stop. I mean, it's not funny.
No, I know.
But, like,
it's astounding how ridiculous it is, right?
When I heard that, I was like, that can't be accurate. And she says it in multiple interviews that the next thing the police said were, can you bring your daughter's dental records? And I was like, I can't imagine. Like, you're like, hey, I haven't heard from my daughter since yesterday. And they're like, great. Do you have copies of her teeth?
Unbelievable.
So at this point, Janice gets, she's like, I'm not waiting until tomorrow morning. She gets flyers printed. She starts passing them out. Like, she's, you know, her kid's missing.
Yeah. And this is, like, before social media, and this is, like, before, I don't know, like, dial-up internet and stuff. So, I mean,
I actually wrote down, did they have 1 hour photo in 1992?
No, you, like, sent it out to Mystic Photo and got it back in, like, a month.
Right. So either way, but Amy, so I have to tell you, that's it.
Huh?
They searched, nothing. Literally, poof, gone. Now, of course, there are tips and suspects and weird things. Then we'll talk about all of that. But, like, that's the end of the disappearance portion of the story.
I thought you were going to go on for, like, a whole other hour about this. It's over?
The narrative? Yeah, it just kind of is like, oh, and they're gone. So the Kansas City News has actually a great quote from a police officer. He says, how do you wrap your head around three people literally disappearing? With no idea where they,
like,
went.
No signs of a struggle? Nothing?
Nothing. He goes on to say, in a lot of cold cases, you can look back and say, oh, this is probably what occurred. And you just can't prove it. With this case, it's anything goes. Anything could have happened. You don't have anything that says they were abducted or they were harmed. It's a big mystery. And that was from Sergeant Todd King. The quote was in the Kansas City News. But, like, I literally wrote, okay, initial thoughts? Question mark.
You wrote alien abduction, right?
Amy, you're going to be like, what? So I literally wrote, and you can't see it, but I wrote, let's dive into part two. It's what I call tips and other weird things.
Well said.
And, well, let me tell you this. There are 10 tips and other weird things we have to talk about. I'm telling this whole, like, for all you people that suggested this, it's because you needed someone to make an outline.
Right.
So, number one, I'm just going to go through them, and then when we get to the suspects and theories, we'll dig into those. So, number one, the quote-unquote crime scene. So, if this is more of a point. Multiple articles discuss the disturbance. Janelle and Mike walked through it, then Janice. And then apparently some friends and family of Cheryl had gone over. Over 10 family and friends had walked around the house, cleaned up, and waited for her to get back.
Oh, they cleaned up? Oh, that sucks.
Yep, and they were all trying to be help. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But, so now your crime scene is non-existent. Those calls in that voicemail. Like, it's just one of those weird things you have to mention because it's bizarre. Like you said, it's like a movie. Like, you're leaving the creepy house and the phone rings.
I mean, it doesn't sound real, but then it's like, yeah, it's real.
Right. Number three. A car was stolen from Cheryl and Susie's neighbor that night, but it was recovered with no link found.
Is this a high crime area?
I don't believe so. I think it was in a better area of Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
I meant to look up how far Skidmore was. But either way.
But you didn't have any right. time.
No, I didn't. Thing number four. A waitress at Cheryl and Susie's favorite restaurant recalls serving the three of them between 1 and 3 a.m., but no one else can corroborate that.
Okay then.
These are all just like pieces of information that you're like, I don't know what to do with them except for to like write them down somewhere.
Yeah, I need one of those big old whiteboards.
I need string.
Oh, with string, yeah.
So, June 14th, which is like a week or two after the missing girls, they asked for all the volunteers to look through like the woods, the waters, the apartment buildings, and all that, because a letter containing a hand-drawn image was discovered in a Springfield News Leader rack at a grocery store. And it had the words written, "Ruse of a gas man checking for leak."
You've got to be kidding me.
Amy, this stuff you can't... Okay, hold on. But remember that gas man thing. We'll come back to that. The next day, a neighbor says, hey, a neighbor of Cheryl and Susie's calls the police to be like, hey, so there's been this weird man like near the house this past week, just like watching. And they try to do a sketch, but she can't recognize him in the lineup. So they have no idea to this day who that is. Oh. Or if it's true.
Oh, I can't.
So number seven. And I'm just going through these because there's a lot of them. But like, it's like I said, it's all unconnected but weird information. July of 92, a woman comes in and she's like, hey, I was on my porch watching the sunrise. And she lived about a mile from Cheryl and Susie's house. And a van pulled in my driveway. And this is around like 6:30 in the morning. And the woman thought it was Susie driving the van based on the posters. She claimed she heard a man yelling in the back, quote, don't do anything stupid, just turn around and get us out of here. But she didn't come forward for a month because she didn't know about the girls that were missing till she saw a poster, which, mind you, was all over her town, and realized she recognized Susie. Now, she identified the van as a 1964-1970 Dodge panel van that was celery colored. Right?
Like green?
Celery.
So green.
Greenish silver.
Okay.
So, ready? Police do the next logical thing. I'm going to ask you, what do you think the next logical thing is?
I'm scared to say, but I would think it would be like to compile all the vehicles in the area and see what matches that description.
Nope. They buy the same van, paint it celery green, and put it outside the police station that says with a sign that says, "Have you seen this van?"
Isn't that tainting the investigation? I mean,
1992, Amy. 1992.
I know, but police have been around since like the beginning of time, so no excuse.
Well, when I read that, I was like, not my next logical step. Mine went where you went. Like, maybe we pulled DMV records. Nope, we're going to buy the same van.
Okay, I don't get it, but okay.
Number 8. A tip from Florida comes in. And they say, hey, we have a suspect for you. His name is Robert Craig Cox.
Of course he has 3 names.
And that's all I'm going to tell you for now because he's on my suspect list, which I have a list.
Okay.
Number 9. America's Most Wanted, which, please bring this back, and Rescue 911. I want both of them back. Aired an episode, and on December 31st, 1992, a man calls in the tip line, and he says, I have information about their disappearances.
Okay.
Amy, when the switchboard operator tried to transfer him to Springfield PD, she disconnected the call.
This is ridiculous, the whole thing.
Police said, based on what he was saying, he had prime knowledge of the abductions. And they publicly appealed for the man to call him back, but he never did.
My silence is only because my jaw is on my desk right now. I'm floored.
You and me both.
Mm-hmm.
So the last weird thing is a crime reporter named Kathy. Came to Springfield in 2000. So, you know, like 8 years after this all happens. And she decides to dig in. Now, the police say there are psychic rumors and town gossip about locations of bodies. And the parking garage at a local hospital comes up numerous times. And the police kind of chalk it up to, like, town gossip. But in 2007, Kathy has the parking garage searched by Rick Norland with ground-penetrating radar. Now, important note, he was actually the person that searched Ground Zero on 9/11 with his radar.
Oh, wow. So, like, flash forward 12 years or something.
Right. Well, that happened in 01. He's doing this in 07.
Oh, right, right.
So,
I can math.
But I'm just saying, like, he has to be damn good at his job.
Mm-hmm.
For him to be called 9/11. Anyway, he does the radar and gets his report. There are 3 abnormalities in the ground.
3?
2 parallel and 1 perpendicular. So I was like, great, let's get a jackhammer and go in. No. Springfield PD says no because the garage was built a year after the girls went missing.
Well, I think it would be a fine place to leave evidence then, right?
Well, they're like, it was built. But my question is, like, when did construction start? Well, duh, if it was finalized after a year, she's not there. But if it was being built.
But who's to say that you can't move a body? I mean, if it's not safe, you're going to probably look to put it in construction. That would make sense.
They can't go in without the police sanctioning the event. Because A, the police won't use it as evidence in an unsanctioned dig. And B, money. They can't dig up an entire parking garage because the hospital's not going to be like, yeah, sure, we'll pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the same time, they went out and bought a van.
Let's not be logical, Amy. Now, at the end of the disappeared episode, they actually roll in live camera footage of December 2010. Police claim they're getting their ducks in a row to put rumors to rest and basically dig up this parking garage. They're like, listen, we're on board now. We're going to do it. That was 9 years ago, and the garage has still not been touched. Ugh.
This is so frustrating. I can't even. Ugh.
So, it's crazy. Like, do you have any thoughts so far? I know I'm just, like, throwing information at you because I feel like I wrote a thesis, literally a thesis, and we're 36 minutes in.
I don't have a good guess whatsoever.
Okay. So here's where we usually dive into theories, but very much like the Holly Cantrell case, I don't want to talk about theories. I think we can rule out, like, suicide. I have a hard time buying a walk away because of Stacy. If Cheryl and Susie, the mom and daughter, wanted to walk away, fine. If it was just them, I think we'd have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Stacy's not going to run away that I know of with her friend's mom and her friend.
Fair.
So, if you have a different opinion, I'm happy to talk through those things with you.
Well, I mean, when one person walks away, they usually have a very good reason to do so. They just don't feel like there's any other way about it. To find three people that feel that things aren't going well enough for them here in their present life, and to feel the need to start over again, I think is just kind of rare.
I would agree with you 100%.
I can't find two other people that are as miserable as I could be.
Right.
And then to say,
and
like,
not someone's mom that's going to be like, yeah, let's go. Like, not for nothing. If this ever came out that it was that, I'm sure Cheryl could be charged with kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, if you're okay with it, I want to talk about theories and rabbit holes in terms of suspects and what we think happened.
Yep. Sounds good.
Are you good with that?
Yep.
Okay. Let's start digging. Okay. So my potential suspects list is four people deep. Oh, no, five. Five people deep. So, and they all, Amy, this one you're going to be like, what? So let's talk about Bart 1 second for Susie's brother. He had gotten in a physical altercation with Susie. He didn't get...
Not going to lie, I completely forgot
about
him.
Yeah, he didn't get along with his mom. But I will say, and his alibi is that he passed out drunk that night, which he admitted had a drinking problem. But police have said he's really cooperative. He also didn't follow your and I advice and took a polygraph.
Hmm.
And he passed.
Okay.
So.
Means nothing to me.
But either way, like, he's been super helpful. He's actually had a blog, which I'll reference. He has done every interview possible. He basically just wants to know what happened to his family. But because he's a male and in their life, you have to at least mention him. I'm totally comfortable, based on everything else, crossing him off the list. But I have to mention him.
Yeah, I get that.
Okay. Number two. Dustin Rekla. Susie's ex-boyfriend. So about a few months before this disappearance, Dustin and his friend Michael Clay were arrested for the weirdest thing I've ever heard of my entire life. They were digging up graves and stealing gold teeth to pawn for money.
Really? I mean, that sounds like a lot of effort.
I mean, although I will say, like, it's very little resistance.
Okay, I guess, if you want to look at it that way.
But you know what, Amy? They were leaving the skulls in trees around town.
I don't even understand. This is bogus.
Did you hear what I just said? They were leaving the skulls in trees. Okay.
The only thing that I can do for you is pick up my jaw from the floor. Like, there's...
As long as you don't have gold teeth. All right. But obviously they were not too smart, because they used their own licenses at the pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
So once the pawn owner was like, so these guys have come in with a lot of gold teeth. Well, Susie was actually deposed and gave a testimony to assist in prosecuting the guys later in the year. And it sounds like they broke up or stopped talking because of this, which, duh. But during Michael's interview about Susie being missing, okay, he's in an interview room with the police officer, and he's being asked about the girl that gave a deposition against him, and now she's missing. Want to know what he said?
Please don't let it be terrible.
I hope those bees are dead.
Oh. Charming.
Yeah, he obviously, which, like, okay, what the heck is wrong with him? Like, even if that's genuinely how you feel, maybe not to the police.
He's a very confident person, I suppose.
According to this appeared episode, he later said, "I hated the interrogating officer, so that's why I said it."
Okay. I wouldn't do that, but okay. You do you.
So, Dustin's alibi was he's at a concert, which what concert goes till after 2 a.m., I don't know. But either way, the girls weren't found, so the boys pled guilty to a lesser charge. Dustin cooperated with the police, but he really didn't have a solid alibi. And his friend said, "I hope those bees are dead." So,
Was he interviewed for the Disappeared episode?
No.
I'd be really curious to know what his fate was.
Yeah, like in life, I have no idea. I don't know. How do you explain that on your, like, when you're going to explain your arrest? Well, I was broke, so I dug up some graves and stole some girl teeth.
No. You can't make that sound any better than what it really is. There's no way.
So that's Dustin Rekla. That's really, for me, suspect number one. Number two. Remember that tip from Florida and your favorite guy, Robert Craig Cox, because he had three names?
Yes.
Well, it was from a man who claims his sister, Sharon Zellers, was a victim and murdered by Robert Craig Cox. So I'll tell you the story, but the tip came in because the family was tracking his movements, and when they realized he was in the area, they wanted to tell law enforcement. And I'm actually going to tell you a lot from the Orlando Sentinel because, truthfully, this is another rabbit hole that I was like, I'm just going to pull the data on, and I'm going to verify it in more than one place, and then I'm going to let a reporter tell the story because there are so many other things happening.
Okay.
So a lot of this came from the Orlando Sentinel. I'm going to quote it. Cox, at 19, a U.S. Army Ranger, was stationed in Fort Benning, Georgia, was staying the night in his parents' Days Inn, about 100 yards where Zeller's body was found. The night of the murder, he returned to his parents' hotel room bleeding, with an inch of his tongue bitten off.
What?
He told deputies he accidentally bit his own tongue off during a fight at an outside roller skating rink. But two deputies working at the rink said there was no fight there.
Ooh.
A surgical technician and a doctor both testified the wound could not have been caused by him biting his own tongue. Which my logic was, if you bite your own tongue, it's like U-shaped facing the bottom of it out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
If someone else bit it, it'd be like, gross. Anyway. Long story short, they connected him to Sharon, and he was convicted. Back to the Orlando Sentinel for a second. Assistant State Attorney Jeff Aston and Fred Lawton argue that he should die because of the cruelty and beating, and because he was convicted of abducting two other women at knife point in 1985.
Oh.
Now, what happened was he was arrested the first time in 1985, and he was serving time in California. Then when they connected him to this other murder, they extradited him to Florida, tried him there, sentenced him to death.
Okay.
Now, great. He was sentenced to death. Awesome. In 1989, this is from the New York Times, in a unanimous decision, the court said there was insufficient evidence to convict Robert Craig Cox. They vacated his death sentence, reversed his conviction, and ordered the trial court to acquit him of all charges.
And then I would assume the DA is like, I'm going to go at this again.
No. He went back to California, served the rest of his sentence for the two other girls that he abducted at knife point, and then was a free man.
What?
Ask me where his parents were living in 1992.
No.
Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, God.
And he moved there with them. So
I cannot believe that dumb luck.
So wait. He gets a job at a used car sales office. And he works with Stacy's dad.
Oh my God. What?
Now, I read online a couple of web sleuths threads said the same company but different car lots. Like, they didn't actually work side by side, but still the same company. Like, I don't know. It's
that
still
is a
bizarre.
Huge coincidence.
But then he got a new job, employed as an underground utility worker. Remember that random
gas man?
So people are quick to point out a great ruse to enter a newly purchased home in the middle of the night is to say, oh my gosh, you have a gas leak.
And that would be a reason, like, I'd open the door or something, you know?
Yep. So, but he has a solid alibi. His parents and his girlfriend.
Oh.
So.
Okay. So solid.
It's an alibi. It gets better. In 1995, he gets arrested in Texas for holding a 12-year-old girl with a weapon. Now, this is when all hell breaks loose. They decide to re-interview his alibi, and his ex-girlfriend, now his ex-girlfriend, then girlfriend, says, I made that up. He threatened me and told me if I didn't say that he was with me, he was going to hurt me. So the police go to Texas, the Missouri police, and they're like, that's it. We're going to, like, really push on him and be like, what happened? And he, like, toys with them a bit, but doesn't give them anything. Well, then he does an interview on TV, and he says, quote, I can tell you that I know the three women are dead, and the person that committed the crime had experience, and they are buried close to Springfield.
That's a really narcissistic thing to say. I mean, at this point in the story, he is otherwise innocent to me, but that's a narcissistic.
Aside from all the other women he killed and tortured, but yeah.
Well, but he was acquitted.
No, he served one for the two.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Sexual
okay.
assault. Yeah. But either way, yes. Now, I agree with you. Police say he lied. He demonstrated attention-seeking behavior.
It also sounds like the OJ thing when OJ was like, this is how I would do it. And then it was like,
well,
really eerie.
Kind of. But this could be just him trying to get people to, like, reach out to him and write to him. He's in prison.
Fair.
And this is on TV. So police, like, this is one of the main, like, oh, he did it. But police aren't sure. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then we're going to introduce another friend for you.
No more.
Stephen Eugene Garrison.
Can't make this up.
No one can see you shake your head. No one can
I know,
see you shake
sorry.
Your head.
Just can't make it up, though.
Amy is shaking her head because they have three names. So August of 1993, Stephen is arrested on an unrelated weapons charge. While negotiating, he says, oh, hey, wait. I have information about the Springfield Three. One night, my drunk friend confessed to murdering them.
That's it?
Now, I have read on multiple places he revealed a piece of information that had not been released publicly.
Not by...
And he said...
Go ahead.
No, so he had information that no one knew. So he brought the police to the place he said they were buried. But there's no bodies. Shocker. But threads mention other items were found. And I'm going to say, quote, unquote, items. What items were found and what information did he know? We don't know. Do you want to know why we don't know? Because a damn judge issued a gag order on this warrant and hearing.
Why?
Amy, there's no information.
Oh.
So anything about this guy and what he knows and what they discovered from that search is all under a gag order against the police and him and his attorneys.
Wow. I don't even know where to go with that.
What? I'm like, And I mean, I'm assuming the reason it still hasn't been released is because it's still technically an open investigation.
Wow.
So I'm also going to read you an excerpt from Bart. It's her brother's blog and the son. He says, he also said a moss green van believed to use to take the woman would be found about 12 miles away south of Fordland. The property search was the same site where in 1990 law enforcement had already searched for the missing women. Property owner Francis Robb Sr. pleaded guilty to 2 counts of second-degree murder in a case authorities at the time believe involved a drug deal gone awry.
Dude, how can there be so many sketchy-ass people involved in this? Or, like, not involved, but I mean, like, that you can find and make a case for connecting them.
Quote, Springfield Police Captain Todd Whitson said, the gag order was rare, and he could not say why it was issued other than to say there is such an order, and it governs the operation and everything related to the operation out here. Added Webster County Sheriff, we can't tell you anything about it until the order is lifted.
I'm speechless. I'm dying to know.
So, like, I'm at 4 suspects deep, and we haven't even talked about, like, a random assailant. Cheryl a target? Right. Were the girls targets? Like, we're 4 suspects and 10 weird items and almost an 45 minutes deep, and we haven't even, like, delved into theories.
Are you overwhelmed? I'm overwhelmed.
I'm telling you, like, I think one of the reasons I was so excited to, like, get this out was to data dump everything I've been reading and just be like, here it is, all of it. Let me vomit everything. Yep. So I've actually worked really hard to, like, not pin down a theory until after I was reciting everything. And I can buy into the fact that someone knocked on the door and was let into the house. Now, there are Reddit theories that say, like, it was either a police officer or someone dressed as one. Because how do you control 3 females?
A weapon?
But, okay, let's say you're holding a gun against one of them. I guess my question is, like, no one tries anything and just... there's 3 of them. Like, how do you get them all into a car? How do you get them?
I'm not exactly going to run. I mean, as soon as someone, all they have to do is turn and point and kill me.
I guess, but like part of it is like, there's 3 of you.
Maybe they're thinking like, I'm just going to play nice and do what this guy says. He can take the money or whatever he wants and... if we just play nice, he'll go away.
Right. Well, obviously, it wasn't a robbery because Cheryl had hundreds of dollars in her purse.
True, what but they didn't know
what
that.
What do you think? What do you think happened? I didn't even ask you.
Well, honestly, like, of all the things that I've heard so far, and I haven't even begun to think about, like, if it was random or whatever, but, like, the gas man seems the most probable to me.
So Robert Craig Cox, who could have come in his regular work uniform.
Yes. Who
and walked in.
Who is a little fearless at this point because he's a little bit experienced.
Yeah. And I mean, he's the one that said in jail that, like, I knew who did it. And yes, very much like the OJ thing. Like, if someone was going to do it, this is what they would do.
Right.
But, like, I also really like Stephen Garrison. Like, what did he know that they put a gag order on it?
I mean, I can't even begin to imagine. I don't think that I've ever heard anything like that either, so I'm really scratching my head here.
I want to say the fact that he knew something, like, solidifies the fact that, like, I think he was involved in some way. But then the minute I think about that sentence, like, he knows something, so he has to know something. Do you know what I mean? I think of Jay Wilds. And he knew everything.
Right.
But actually knew nothing.
Also true.
So I'm torn. Like, I'd like to know, A, what's in that sealed in that gag order. I want to know what happened to that light bulb on the porch. I want to know who was calling the house. I want to know what was on the voicemail.
Yeah, there's a lot of unfortunate things that led up to this.
Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Except for asking for her dental records, I guess. That was good police work right there.
Well, it's a little bit better than buying a van.
Fair enough. And I, like, okay, so I don't know. Maybe, so Amy, maybe someone comes on the porch, right?
Yep.
Hits the outside globe. And it's like 3 a.m. yep. at this point, right? Because at some point, or it's even 6 a.m., which actually is less creepy. Because, like, the sun's coming up. Do you know what I mean? I feel like sometimes people think that, like, 6 a.m. is, like, a safe time.
What month is this again?
June. So, you know, they break the globe.
Well, the sun might have been coming up around 5.
Yeah. Well, so they break the globe, right? And then they knock on the door, and Cheryl comes to the door, and she's like, what is happening? And he's like, man, like, you have a gas leak. Look, it shattered your bulb. Like, you guys got to get out of the house. Mm-hmm. And she's probably panicking and is like, let's go.
Absolutely.
And then, boom, gone. And then once he had them in the van, if he's like, you drive to one of them.
Yeah, he could have been like, you wait in my van. And it's better than standing outside, even if it is June. And then he locked him in.
Right.
Or something like that. It's plausible.
And one of them is driving. You can keep your eyes on everyone.
True, too.
So, I mean, I'm on board with that. But, like, why? I mean, and I guess Robert Craig Cox did kidnap multiple women, you know, so, like, that's his M.O.,
he might not have known that there was a third.
So you're saying he went after, like, only Cheryl?
Well, maybe.
Well, because keep in mind, the girls weren't supposed to sleep there.
Right. So maybe it didn't go to plan, but he kind of rolled with it.
He was like, oh, bonus?
Yeah, in some sick, perverted way.
Yeah, because, like, some people are like, oh, what if he was stalking the girls? Well, that wasn't their plan. So he literally had to have been following him that night. And then, like, part of me is like, well, did they go to the diner at 3 a.m. where they had that sighting?
There's not enough of anything for me to buy into that.
I mean, then that's fine. You know, it's just, like, one of those weird things that's like, oh, well, maybe they did.
Did
you know?
She look at her checks and... she saw that there were 3 items ordered by 3 individuals?
I mean, I think that'd be with today, but not what happened back then. And then, like, I'm like, okay, so what? He kidnaps them and, you know, likely assaults them in some way and kills them.
Right.
And then what? And do the voicemails fit? Like, do you think someone, like, took these girls and then was watching the house and was like, oh, look, another girl. Let me call and creep her out. And he had the number of the house? Because that, to me, means she was targeted.
Well, yeah, I think she was targeted.
You do? You don't think it was random?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think she was targeted in that, like... it was a woman that lived alone, or, like, it was her and he obsessed over her?
I think it was what he thought was opportunity.
Okay, so, like, a woman that lives alone, it's easy in, easy out.
Yeah, that's kind of what, what's his face? BTK? He targeted women that lived alone. It didn't really matter their age or anything. It was just the fact that they were living alone.
And truthfully, but then again, okay, so hold on. I think less about a crime of opportunity in that there were 3 cars in the driveway. He had to know he was going into a situation he could control. Because, like, how do you know one of those cars doesn't belong to a guy like my husband who's 6'6"?
True.
know what I mean? Like, if you're going to roll up to a house and break in, I would assume you pick a house with the least amount of people and vehicles. Unless you know all three of those cars are single females.
If you were watching, you'd know.
That gives me the creeps.
And it should.
So then I'm like, okay, so do you think it's Robert Craig Cox still? Or could you be buying into the Stephen Garrison guy? I mean, he's arrested and goes, hey, you know what? Like, one of my... Amy, conspiracy theory for a second.
Okay.
What if somehow Robert Craig Cox and Stephen Garrison know each other?
I would have to know, like, I don't know. There's not enough for me. Well, I would have to know, like, do they both use substances? Are they both from the same area? Do they have a person in common?
Amy, apparently they all live in Springfield, which, okay, that's scary as hell.
Yeah.
So I think we just put Missouri as the place we're never going to visit in general. I'm sure it's very nice there, people, and I'm sure you have great scenery and views. But between Springfield, Missouri, and Branson, Missouri, and I'm sorry, Skidmore, Missouri, I think that we should just pass.
Fine by me right now.
Which, by the way, they're 4 hours apart.
All right, we'll go somewhere in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Kansas City. It's in the middle. I'm still going to pass.
So even if that second guy, what's his name? Todd? Did I make that up? Steven?
Yes, you totally made it. Steven. Yes, Steven.
It still points me back to his potential conspiracy theory friend, Mr. Three-Name Man.
Robert Craig Cox.
Robert Craig Cox.
But the property owner, Francis Lee Robb Sr., that they searched... I'd like to know why they searched his property, you know, years before that.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's enough weird things with that that it made me pause. Like, they have to put a gag order on whatever they find, and he knows information that no one knows.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a lot. But then I also think about, like, okay, did you listen to Up and Vanished and the Tara Grimstead case?
I did not.
You need to, but Payne Lindsay does an amazing job, and he basically investigates a missing person, right? And he shakes enough trees to actually shake out
really
what happened. Yeah, it's actually solved now because of, I attribute a lot to his investigation. What happened was someone came forward to the police because Payne was like, poke, 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 wow, poke, poke. Either way, everyone in the town said... There were these rumors that she was, like, burned or buried in, like, a walnut farm, but they didn't know. And that's what ended up happening.
Huh.
And it's because, like, the rumors and talk. So part of me is like, well, all the rumors said they're in this parking garage. Could that same thing be happening? Like, they're buried in the parking garage?
To me, that's totally plausible.
Yeah, police, could you go rip that up? Because that would be great. Like, what are we waiting for?
I mean, that would absolutely suck if they found nothing, but I feel like three human lives is worth it.
Yeah, like, someone needs to start a GoFundMe to rip up the parking garage. And if nothing's there, then nothing's there. Great. We can put this entire theory that they're there to bed and give their families at least the answer that they're not there.
Right.
Instead, their families are wondering, like, oh my God, could you imagine going to that hospital and being like, I wonder if my sister or mom or friend is buried underneath me right now?
No, I can't. That's awful.
Like, it's, I don't know that I'd go there. Especially that I know the guy found three abnormalities. Like, three?
Pretty specific.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, for me, it's not random.
I agree.
I don't think it was the creeper on the street unless the creeper was one of these two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Although, Amy, we didn't even talk about the two guys that didn't go to jail because the girls were missing. And one of them said, I hope those bees are dead.
I don't know. People say crap that's dumb all the time.
So you're just willing to chalk that up to dumb crap?
Yeah, kind of. I didn't hear anything else that... I don't know.
I mean, she testified against them.
Yeah, and therefore I would wish something awful too if I were that kind of person. I'm not, for the record.
Yeah. I just didn't know I could look at a police officer and be like, oh, she's missing? Yeah, I hope those bees are dead. What?
We've heard enough dumb interviews to know.
I know.
Yeah. The people will say anything.
I know. But it's still like, yes. I mean, look, Amy Rowe Bechtel's husband. I'm missing a person. Do you have an extra?
Well, yeah. So do I have to sell you any more on that?
No, I just can't wrap my head around the fact that, like, oh, they're missing? Yeah, I hope they're dead. What? But you're willing to, like, write them off completely?
I feel like if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. I mean, this guy assaulted females in the past. It fits.
Yeah. So you're on Robert Craig Cox. Like, that's your guy.
Yeah, I feel like it's screaming, hey, it's obvious. And people are like, I just can't wrap my head around just it being that simple.
Yeah, see, like, his parents and his girlfriend being his alibi, too, like, I don't know. And then his girlfriend being like, well, that actually didn't happen because he threatened me.
I mean, take her out of the equation. I mean, lots of parents would do that for their kid. I mean, I wouldn't, but a lot do.
Which blows my mind. Like, my parents would have my back and get me a great lawyer, but would be like, no. You have to face your own music.
And I hope that I would be the same parent of holding my child accountable.
And I think it's very different than, like, if your kid, you know, like, you have little kids. If your littlest put a candy bar in his pocket at a store and you were like, oh, I thought I paid for it. Like, that's different for me.
No, I'd be like, he took that candy bar and, sorry, but we're working on it.
That's what I mean. Like, you, exactly. But you'd be like, oh, I'll pay for it. It was totally an accident.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You wouldn't be like, well, he probably just stole it.
Yeah.
That, to me, is different than if he killed someone.
Yeah, that's different.
You know, so, like, do I fault parents that are willing to, like, no, my kid didn't come home drunk? Okay, fine. But, like, hey, there's these three missing women, and we know your son has a history of abusing and kidnapping and killing women. Yep, he was with me.
Stranger things have happened.
I know. I'm telling you, though, this case, like, I will say there are some podcasts out there about it. I only listened to one, and I tried to, like, I didn't take notes. I actually, real talk, made my husband go for a ride with me last weekend to listen to the podcast, so I couldn't write anything down. And he was like, I don't want to go. Just drive around for an hour so you can listen to a podcast. And I was like, no, you have to.
That's really funny because he doesn't love true crime, right?
So he's into some of it, but he hates missing people and he hates unsolved cases. So, like, our entire podcast.
Right. Poor Anthony.
So, yes. So, but there's a ton of articles, but they all have, like, the same facts. You have to, like, dig into Reddit and web sleuths to, like, really start breaking out theories and, like, being like, okay, so that's how that fits. But no one, truthfully, from when they left the party at 2:15 a.m. to when Janelle went back to their house at between 8 and 9 in the morning, there's nothing.
All right.
It's like blackness.
I'm sold on Mr. Three Name Guy, and that's his name to me. I don't care.
Robert Craig Cox.
Yep. He's just going to be Three Name Guy.
I go between Robert Craig Cox and Stephen Eugene Garrison, but I know that we want to open up to the audience. Guys, please, 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 especially you people that asked me to do this case, please tell me what you think.
Listen, because people, I must live in a cave somewhere and didn't really know about this case, and now hearing that so many people know about it and know the details, I fully expect a full-blown conversation on social media.
Oh, 100%.
Tell me everything I don't know.
Shout out to Joseph in the UK and Sarah in Illinois, who both requested this in the last couple weeks. Thank you for driving me down these rabbit holes and making me go nuts and writing an entire thesis.
Yeah, now she's even more brilliant and gifted for it.
I don't know about all that. But yes, please follow us, social media, reach out. Please like, we haven't said it in a while, like, subscribe, rate. We would love a review. A 5-star one would be amazing. It really does make a difference for us in the podcasting world. And also, keep listening. We are, and I mean, Amy said it this week the best. We are so excited that on release day, our downloads like blow up. It means you guys are getting the notification that we're available and listening right away.
Yeah.
And we love it. Please keep listening. Please go on social media. There's always a post, unless we forget about it, Down the Rabbit Holes podcast and social media. On Facebook, that's a discussion post. On Instagram, there's a discussion post. Please tell us what you think. We work really hard to respond and jump in. We do like seeing you guys go back and forth, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to jump in and throw you what we think, too. So, Amy, last week, shout out. Every single person on social media agreed with your abortion theory.
Yay! Well, it's a tragedy, so I'm just going to end it there.
Yeah. So, have a great week. We'll be back next Tuesday with a whole new case.
Have a great week. Bye. Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.